Welcome back. I think we're at episode 282. Well, Joe, looks like Antifa is back. At least trying back to come back.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a an incident in Atlanta, I think, where an environmentalist shot at some deputies, and they shot at him, and I think they killed him. But Antifa used that opportunity to riot in Atlanta. So they're back in the news, but then you had this incident. I think this was from earlier this month. This guy was
Tyre Nichols.
Tyre Nichols, yes. Sorry, yeah. He was assaulted, or sorry, he was arrested, detained by five Memphis Police Department officers, and he was, I guess, tased and sprayed and beaten, and he died of his wounds in the hospital. The five officers have been arrested, and this has become, I guess, a pretext or an excuse to riot against police brutality, white supremacy, white cops, the police, I guess they say. Only problem is Memphis, Tennessee, of course, is 65% Black. The police department is majority Black. The five officers involved in assaulting Mr. Nichols are Black. So that they're struggling to maintain the narrative. Nevertheless, we're instructed by CNN's Van Jones that just because the police officers are Black doesn't mean that this isn't a result of white supremacy, because the Black officers you see internalized hatred for their fellow Blacks when they commit violence against Blacks. It's obvious, Joe. See, it's Whitey's sure. fault.
Well. CNN jumped into this, trying to explain it, and had the ever alert Van Jones do opinion pieces, and he actually wrote up some stuff. And he pointed out that it was an example of white racism against Blacks. You wonder how would this be possible? And he pointed out that it is the Black cops being brainwashed into self-hatred by white supremacy. And that convinces them to kill the Black victims.
So it's like a false consciousness that they're...
almost like a dream state that they've been put into. But his logic is just, well, I mean, it's non-existent, but it's fascinating to try to just see how he arranges the sophistry. He wrote, at the end of the day, it is the race of the victim who is brutalized, not the race of the violent cop, that is most relevant in determining whether racial bias is a factor. So since it is not the race of the cop, then who cares about whether or not it's white cops doing the beating?
Yeah, why do they report white cops then?
Right, exactly. I mean, in other words, you just can't have it both ways. But there isn't really any way to spin this into the meme that they want. And so I would just say, you know, I would imagine that CNN's 20 viewers will be ignited and will take this seriously. And this is a pretext for Antifa to get into the streets. And they have been. There have been riots all over the place, and there'll probably be a lot more over the weekend.
I think there's a riot in Dublin, Ireland.
But it's just all it really is, of course, is just an example of how mentally debased people who have been subjected to the irrational racial charges and meme have become. I mean, this is really what you're looking at with all, you know, the kind of response you're getting is that people, because the white cop on the Black victim is really not supported very well by facts. I mean, you look at the details of the Lloyd George case, you know, you can see that actually it's hard to really see the racial aspect in this. But because it's such a powerful thing, you get the minds of the commentators produce stuff like this. And frankly, it's just insane. I mean, you can't read Van Jones' article and you know, do anything other than just scratch your head.
Well, are there any other problems that afflict Black people other than racism? Is that the only thing that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, and this is they will always be able to use the racism as an excuse, and it's just sad to say, just a way of being distracted from the real problems, which are the debasement of African American culture by the Judeo-Masonic organization that runs the place, and this was very deliberate and intentional. The Black community was on the uptick in the 1950s and had been since the Civil War. Slow progress was being made. Because I'm so old, I can actually tell you what Watts was like in the, you know, pre-riot era. And it was a community that was, you know, lower class. It was plagued by every single problem, but it was on the uptick. Then with the deliberate assault, which...
Yeah, it had healthy aspirations.
It was, the grammar of the people there. I mean, I can remember being at restaurants with my father the Black waiters, I was thinking of how well-dressed they were and how well-spoken. I mean, this was just my, you know, 12-year-old impression of the world, you know, and that all went away when you know, the two great prongs were the Great Society, destruction of the family, and of course, the introduction of the hoe, pimp, rap, crack cocaine culture, mm-hmm. which was, you know, the insertion of crack cocaine into the community was well documented as a CIA project. They give this explanation that the CIA just needed money to fund the Contras, which is completely insane. Anyone who believes this just cannot think, because the CIA has access to unlimited black box money. We'll talk about the Great Reset and the end of, you know, the end game of capitalism later on. But this is the Iran-Contra cover story for the insertion of crack cocaine into the black communities. Just doesn't hold water. And it was just a deliberate attack against the community. The idea was to create what we have now, which is just a, you know, pornographic, single male, ultra violent clump of humanity heading into the abyss, which is virtually a vortex that they're trying now to shove the white, you know, the cast offs of the white middle class into that vortex, into this multicultural clump. I've been looking at TikTok, and they have just, they're normalizing pornography. Mm-hmm. It's completely clear that this is a very strong agenda. It doesn't get the publicity, you know, that the transgender meme does, but no question that they are just promoting TikToker after TikToker who have these videos which ask specifically women to describe their most debauched sexual activity. And this is the normalization of the pornographic male and now the pornographic female. The whole point is to absolutely put a nail in the coffin of the family for the purpose of making sure that we are fragmented, isolated individuals with no family, no children, no ethnicity, no pride in what we are. We're just going to become this pornographic clump. And man, it's just easy to control a group like them.
Yeah. I mean, you take a city like Memphis. I believe, wasn't that the city where a woman was raped last summer by that?
Yeah.
But by a person who'd just been recently released, I think, out of all that crime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
By a black man. Tucker Carlson, a guest, who made a point about this, said, listen, this is just a distraction. It's a distraction away from what's going on in the Ukraine. And it's a distraction what's really going on in this country. He says the real problem is the way the blacks treat each other. They can't treat each other in a civilized manner, the violence they inflict upon each other. And that's the problem. And he pointed out the fact that everyone involved in this incident was a young black man, the victim and the five cops. And he says, this the city itself, the police chief, is run by a single black female. The problem is that the black men have no regard for proper authority because they grow up in broken homes. And so they run away from the cops like this, so they create an incident. I believe this guy ran for some reason, creating an incident, not justifying how he was treated. And same with the cops. Then, of course, the Memphis Police Department, after 2020, because of recruiting problems, because of the summer of George Floyd and all that, they had their drastic reduced standards for their recruitment. And so no longer does someone, as a police officer, need an associate's degree to be a police officer, and they can even have a felony. So
I just want to say, you mentioned when we before we started recording, the grammar of the policeman is,
you hear the tape,
and really they could just be a group of Crips.
Yeah,
you know, their the vernacular is so kind of street tough. And really, they come across in their behavior, at least, you know, and I don't like to make comments without really knowing everything about the incident. But I'm just going to say the impression I had was it was just
lack of professionalism.
It had about the moral structure of a carjacking, you know. I mean, everyone involved just seemed, I mean, I don't really know what the
ability for someone to express themselves, articulate, have vocabulary, expresses their ability to think. That's why language is so important. So you cut people off from a language, they can't think properly, have lower order thinking. Hire that element in the police force, you can have this problem. This obviously doesn't guarantee you won't have a problem if you have, you know, higher operating, more articulate officers, but it does demonstrate that they're not hiring high caliber individuals into these positions. That factored in the problems of Memphis, Tennessee has, because it's 65% black. When you have a population that's disproportionately black, you're gonna have all the problems that come with come with the black community, high crime, particularly among its young black males. And that, again, blaming it on whitey, sorry, ain't gonna cut it, especially in this situation. Of course, Van Jones has to do that because that's his bread and butter. Everything comes down to racism because he's a race agitator. That's his thing. There's no money in self-improvement and pointing direction at blacks themselves, because you can't extort money from them. You can't extort money from whitey, for the government, and these things and lawsuits. So, but then the other element is this the pretext for Antifa to go rioting. So Antifa, which is, I think, is mostly white, gonna go riot because a black guy is beat up by other black cops in Memphis, Tennessee. But then again, there is a logic to Antifa's apparent madness, because the organization's roots, well, it is a Jewish operation, and Antifa's, of course, mission is opposing fascism, and they're dedicated to using any opportunity to create chaos and fear. Of course, fascism, properly understood or understood according to the American Jewish Committee's authoritative personality, is defined as a state of mind or a predisposition to desire order, moral and political, and a respect for authority. That's why Antifa mobilizes to foment riots and defend drag queen story hour from protests.
I was just going to say, that really explains Antifa's sort of mission statement, doesn't it? It's completely clear.
Yeah. So they go after, and by the way, most of the victims of Antifa are small businesses and stuff like that. This is why it enjoys the support of big media, government, and big capital. Hardly really a protest thing. Of course, you know, if the feds wanted to crack down on Antifa, they could do it in an afternoon, because they could just invoke RICO and go after them. It's very easy to do a little police work and go on social media. From what I understand, it's harder now because they can't use Twitter. So they have to use some of the alternative sites to mobilize, so they can't mobilize as much. But you also have these decimated police forces in the past 2 years, don't have the resources. Or if they do have the resources, they don't have the political will to go after it. Because again, a lot of what you're seeing with Antifa is supported by the cops. That's the something you don't understand here. The political brass are ordered to stand down. Of course, the FBI is a great example of that. FBI, criminal operation. You expect them to crack down on a criminal operation in Antifa? It will when it's politically beneficial to crack down on it.
It's just a department of Amazon at this point. I mean,
yeah,
it's there to destroy the remaining retail businesses that mm-hmm. stand in the way of Amazon being a totalitarian.
It's classic high-low against the middle bio-Leninism, if you read what that is. This is classic. Exactly.
This is classic. It's a classic example of that phenomenon. And so
the problem is the middle America, Bubus Americanus, Trump flag-waving white America still don't understand that. You know, there's what's going on here?
they really are. Well, I wonder if the unvaccinated as a rule are kind of waking up to the con game that's going on with Antifa and the destruction of middle-class businesses. People I've talked to just of late, small sample size, but I see a growing awareness of all this because it's so blatant at this point. Walmart, Amazon, the online world of Google. I mean, these are the beneficiaries of the destruction of the cities, right? And so, I mean, they have obviously relationships into the oligarchs. And so you're not going to see, in fact, that's why, of course, the Antifa is not characterized as just thugs needing, vigilante justice meted against by the media. I mean, look at how Antifa is presented in the media as a serious sort of political movement that we have to learn about and have sensitivity regarding. You get these pieces by Van Jones, which basically are saying in effect that Antifa is a rational response to this systemic racism, which is the core cause of all these things, right? Mm-hmm. So you're creating this world in which what was middle class European America, Christian America, is now being regulated step by step into the second class citizenship, and of course financially, I don't know if you caught the reparation proposals that have been coming in California.
$5 million per.
Yeah, per $5 million per victim.
Slave descendant.
but this would really set up a kind of almost an Uber Germany, where instead of the Jews being kind of a perpetual parasitic class, you'd have blacks being, almost given, what can you say, godlike stature. And the whites would be a perpetual sort of ant colony providing, resources to.
Well, aren't whites 39% of the population now?
In California?
Yeah.
Yes, I think a little higher than that, but it's about, I don't think we're any more than 41 or 42%. Well,
the majority are non-white. So what are all the Hispanic, Mexicans and Central Americans?
Well, Hispanics, they just don't understand the issue and they would never put up with it. I mean, this, it's, and I've said this 100 times, the only thing that's holding California together at this point are the Latinos who have.
Now, California was never a slave state.
Correct.
So
no, never was. And the only kind of enslavement that ever occurred was to the Native Americans when, Junipero Serra came by and set up the mission statement and basically incarcerated a bunch of the Indians, or so the history is told. And so they would have reparations due them. But the Latino community, I just, they aren't satanic and they're hard to fool. So I don't think that they're going to, play ball with the San Francisco committee that created the reparation proposal of 5 million. They were 100% black. That's just the demographic that they created to in the steering committee to make the reparation mm-hmm. theory. So the Latinos aren't going to go for it. So California's hope is in the Latinos at this point, which shows you just where the state has, gone to. Because the whites, I mean, Tim, it's one of the worst collection of individuals imaginable. There's just so much Hollywood sort of influence, into the young people and into the middle class. The kind of ordinary sort of family value white would probably be less than oh gosh, I mean, I just have to guess, you know, but it's certainly be less than half. So, you know, it's just really not a good demographic. You know, that's just the nature of our state. Which really is holding it together are the Latinos, but even they are being, you know, overwhelmed to some extent by the immigration, because their communities can't really, you know, welcome hundreds of thousands of people from El Salvador. Further, there are like racial tensions, because remember, the, you know, these are different ethnic background individuals. These are different nationalities. Mm-hmm. And they're territorial, you know, the Latinos who have different kind of parts of the Los Angeles geography as different backgrounds, form gangs and get into really horrible wars over. But the idea of like inserting like an El Salvadorian, you know, community in the middle of that, I mean, it's just, it'll just end up as a race war. So, you know, future is bright, buddy. You better live in an enclave if you're going to go to California.
Now, so here again, a lot of this, you know, latest incident in Memphis, Tennessee, and Antifa, serves as a wonderful distraction from some of these problems, like the fact that the country's southern border is being overrun, millions are pouring over the border and into the United States, complete stand down by the federal government, the Biden administration, in violation of the law. Of course, you have, you know, the nonsense, the insanity that's going to Ukraine. We recently shipped 31 M1 Abrams tanks. I don't know if there's anyone in Ukraine who can actually use them, but they're being shipped anyway. They'll probably be destroyed before they can be used. The Germans were, of course, into sending these what they call the Leopard tanks, apparently just to prolong the fighting there. I don't know what 30 tanks are gonna make the difference here, but it does help prolong the war, increase tensions. And now you mentioned to me that our own Assistant Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland, is not bragging, or not bragging, but gloating, or at least expressing gratification about the last year's act of terrorism.
No, she's bragging.
Yeah.
She's bragging. And this was on the Senate floor.
So it's like an oversight committee hearing.
Yeah. And they're trying to figure out what's going on in the Ukraine. And they brought in the expert, Victoria Nuland, which just on its face kind of arches one's eyebrow, because remember, this is F the EU Nuland, mm-hmm. right? You know, everyone recalls the infamous recorded, you know,
she was behind the 2014 coup that installed the current government.
She was talking about which person in she Ukraine. Wanted installed as the president of the Ukraine. So she just is dripping in blood. I mean, if you think about the moral perspective of this woman, I mean, just how much death and violence she has directly caused. It's just an unbelievable. So, you know, they were discussing, you know, Nord Stream 2, and of course the absence of it is leading to all of these problems with heating and things for Europe in general. But, you know, she and Cruz were having a tete-a-tete, and she said, and this is a quote, I mean, makes Van Jones look reasonable. She says, like you, I am, and I think the administration is very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea. Tim, I just want to read it again so that everyone who's listening can grasp the moral perspective of this woman. She goes, like you, I am, and I think the administration is very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea. And she said it, and there's a video of the thing, and she has that smile. You can imagine the smirk that she had. Remember during the FDEU conversation, which is not a video, but you can hear the jauntiness and how energized she is to being able to insert a dictator over the Ukrainian people. Well, here they have her face on video and she's smiling, brother. I mean, this individual, you just kind of wonder what is, you know, is there, are there any limits to the depravity that she thinks she's entitled to commit? What are the limits? I mean, she is actually, well, first of all, this is a kind of confession about who's in back of nursery, right? The idea that they were gratified certainly suggests they were involved in the, you know, bringing the thing about. So that's kind of, I guess.
Well, basically what she's endorsing, whoever did it, she's endorsing exactly. An act of international terrorism.
And so, you know, so anyway, this is.
So the U.S. government is on record as represented by New York Attorney Newland in supporting an act of terrorism and sabotage.
Exactly right.
Okay.
That is the minimum you can get out of, you know, her statement. And so this is just where we are as a nation. The dictatorship and a morally depraved and genocidal dictatorship is now bold enough that it can make statements like this and not worry that there's going to be any political reaction.
Yeah, I mean, you think the senators would have said, oh, really? And then proceeded with questions from that point on.
Of course.
But again, there is no real oversight by the Senate.
And of course, this just leads to the war is perpetual. There is no end to it. Well, I'm sure they'll bring it to a conclusion at some point. But as you know, my position on this, the war is just part of the depopulation of Europe movement that they are, the oligarchs are implementing. And so there's really no reason for them to end it. You know, there's just no reason.
Well, I think as many as 9 million have left Ukraine.
Yep. Or where? More. And the fatalities, you know, we talk about the fatalities are, you know, unknown, but they're all, of course, European, mind you. And there's probably a couple hundred thousand dead. I guess that would be, I would say, probably a good guess from what I can gather.
So this would be like a Ukrainian Napka, as they.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's at least a million profound casualties. So it's really been a success for the depopulators.
Yeah. And again, this was, well, it's just like there was talk at Davos about sending more weapons to Ukraine to prolong the war, you know, that. Inviting Zelensky and his wife to speak. No one invited Putin to give his side of the story, of course, because there isn't another side of the story to this, apparently. Just Putin wanted to take over the world or something. It was a prelude to his, I guess, to be like Hitler. That's basically how it's explained to us. It's got nothing to do with the coup in 2014, the deaths of of 10,000-15,000 people in the Donbass being shelled by the Zelensky government, or the constant expansion of NATO onto Russia's borders, that Russia's near abroad, Russia's, you know, security needs in Crimea, these things. Now they're talking about taking back Crimea, and so it's, yeah, again, it's obviously that there's something obviously much more is going on here. Recently, of course, at Davos, the representative of Saudi Arabia said that they'd be open to selling oil in currencies other than dollars. And there's talk of a petrol yuan.
Yeah.
SDR is administered by the International Monetary Fund. These are special drawing rights. There's a basket of currencies. There's some speculation, again, why this war was fomented. Well, one thing is the grand strategy. It's the Mackinder Doctrine, is they want to, as expressed by Victoria Nuland, by blowing up the pipeline, you separate Germany from Russia, which is an old strategy, is, you know, keep the Germany down, the Russia's out, and the Americans in, as they say. It's sort of been the strategy since the Second World War, but it's a broader strategy, the Mackinder Doctrine, to keep the continent from unifying, and that's the way the sea power, represented by Great Britain, the Anglo-American Zio Empire, to control the global economy. And well, one thing is, this war has put a lot of strain on international trade. The sanctions that the U.S. government has imposed around the world, I think as much as 40% of the world population is under some sort of sanction, the sanction office. Of course, this leads to a de-dollarization of the global economy. And this draws into question, you know, the role of the petrodollar, the world, you know, de facto reserve currency is the U.S. dollar, which has been a source of a lot of of power for the U.S. government over the years since the 1970s, since the gold window was closed in 1971. They negotiate this petrodollar deal. Basically, the Saudi Arabia would say, we'll sell our everything we export will be in sold in dollars. And so it allows the U.S. government to run up enormous budget deficits, which we see now. It's $31 trillion as a national debt. At the same time, maintaining a status of a world reserve currency, which is sort of a contradiction if you understand how these things are supposed to work. Of course, it's all political. The economy doesn't function properly. It's rigged. And it's based upon military power and all types of intrigues, nothing to do with the real economy and ebb and flow and productivity and exports and these things. This is why the U.S. economy has become a debtor nation, become highly financialized, the so-called fire economy, finance, insurance, and real estate, as they say, and very very little productivity in terms of industry and these things. Still major agriculture, though, that's being bought up. But there's some speculation that this crisis that's being prolonged is a pretext to ushering in first. One thing is the dethroning the U.S. dollar. In the past, the banking elite have dethroned other reserve currencies like the British pound sterling in the middle of the 20th century when the dollar was enthroned as the reserve currency after Bretton Woods. That was 1944, and that lasted to 1971. Then you had the petrodollar system, which has been the case since 1973. But what's happening is this could be a pretext for taking the dollar down, and because the central bankers are deciding to sort of pull out of America. They've kind of pushed credit to the limit in the West, and now they want to move on. Perhaps this explains why China was developed. And this is why Saudi Arabia, you would ask, why would Saudi Arabia talk about not selling the oil and dollars? Well, they're actually talking about not selling oil. This is Mohammed bin Salman, I think, who has sort of become the dictator there. Well, he's on board the Agenda 2030 thing, and they've offered all types of artificial intelligence and these things. So he's selling out, his country, because he's told that he'll be bought off with artificial intelligence and the whole Great Reset thing. And that might be why Saudi Arabia would consider stopping oil exports, because the new economy is a war on fossil fuel, because it's a war on energy. That's why we're seeing a lot of this false energy crisis that is helped by something like a fomented war in the Ukraine.
And the whole green agenda thing has been developed. It's just a kind of lump of sophistry, scientific sophistry. I mean, that's why they have to change the name of it every 5 years.
Well, ultimately, they want to bring in these central bank digital currencies that are administered IMF.
Electronic control over all of the transactions, because this is part of the ultimate.
What I'm saying is people think, well, why would the U.S. government, abuse its exorbitant privilege and threaten the dethronement of the U.S. dollar? They would assume that Janet Yellen at the Treasury cares about preserving the American dollar when she's part of a plot to destroy it, because she's part of a plan to more or less liquidate America.
Exactly right. And if she wasn't part of the plot, she would be speaking out. One of the reasons you can see how vast the control is over our financial systems is that it's sort of like their control over the medical industry, right? How many doctors, pharmacists spoke out against the lockdowns and the vaccine, even though, just on a cursory kind of review of the science, you can see how dangerous the stuff was and how ineffective lockdowns were. So here, you mentioned 30, we're actually closer to 40 trillion, because the Federal Reserve has on its balance sheet all of this funny money, which we are as responsible for as we are for the treasury bonds throughout the world. So we're really in debt at a federal level for like close to 40 trillion, which is just ludicrous, because perhaps the economy could handle, who knows, like 5 trillion, maybe 10 at the very, very most in a fantasy world. So it isn't a debt that is coherent. I mean, it may as well be $100 trillion, right? It's just, there's no possible way we can pay it back. As I've said many times, I don't believe that the money that the central banks create is real. None of it is real. All that we are actually dealing with is mind control. They just tell us that it's valuable, and we have believed it, that it's valuable for so long, and it has worked for so long, that we now are used to this so-called currency working. But it's been developed for the purpose of control, and whenever they want to move the control into a different, more technologic structure, they can, and it's easy to do. They just get rid of the debt, right, or whatever it is you want to call the dollar, and they just develop some new form of that's why the cryptocurrencies are being developed, because they're normalizing mm-hmm. the idea that there is nothing even physically tangible to wealth. It's just an electronic event which we believe happens, you see. So there's no question that in the Great Reset, all of the debt will disappear. The $100 trillion of world debt will go away, or just be, somehow miraculously jubileed, but it's, they're not going to, the debt was there to, there are different reasons it was developed, but it was primarily developed so that the governments could have the power to develop the technology of enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, and the wars were, of course, you couldn't possibly have done them without, the creation of the gigantic debt, nor could you do all of the bioengineering and all of the stuff that we're being suffering with now if the government didn't have the just unlimited capacity to use wealth in any way that it saw fit. So that was why you had this gigantic treasury bill and bond debt structure develop. And now, now they're transitioning into an electronic, sort of world. And I just wanted to mention that, a lot of people are curious as to why there's no inflation. They don't understand that. They go, why? Well, there is, of course, dramatic inflation, but why isn't it much worse? And it's because in the current situation, we don't have the visual signals. I mean, think about the Weimar. It was because there were like people with wheelbarrows full of money. This was the signal to the citizen that there was no wealth associated with the currency. But here we don't see the gigantic movement of money. It all happens electronically. Moreover, we can't audit any of it. I mean, this is just this ludicrous situation. When you have $40 trillion in debt and you cannot audit the entity which creates and buys the debt. So, this is just a profound impotence of citizenship. It just shows how little of a democracy, or how little impact in the goings on of the country the citizen has, because the situation isn't just catastrophic, it's literally ludicrous at this point. And I would say with the reset, they certainly have in mind, just as you suggested, a transition to a central bank digital currency, something like that.
Yeah, this is, some people have said what we're saying here is sort of late capitalism or end stage capitalism, which was a term, I think, developed by Marxists, or at least leftists, in the middle of the 20th century. I think in more modern times, people use late capitalism to describe sort of the gross wealth and income inequality that we're seeing between rich and poor, and sort of the erosion of the middle class, lack of opportunity, and also the conspicuous consumption among the elite, lack of concern. And we see with global capitalism, the idea of outsourcing industry and not having any regard for your home country. It's a popular phrase because, again, it's a way of discerning that the system just isn't working anymore. Some people will say, well, the solution is socialism, which is sort of the dialectic. Capitalism and socialism actually are related. In fact, Marx himself didn't condemn capitalism. He saw it as a necessary process and a sort of historical scientific process. The capitalism was a necessary phase in these things. But the again, what you're saying is sort of rampant corruption, monopoly capitalism, the sort of concentration of power that we associate, you know, with the central bankers. A lot of people, you know, it's Global Corp, called Zio Corp, if you will, sort of the Rothschild banking interest. Sort of they prop up the business model, and they impose the debt slavery, the usury, which actually creates an inexorable process or logic to this, the concentration of wealth and the exploitation of wealth to further concentrate wealth. We saw that during the pandemic. We see that with the wars and sort of the government contracts, the military industrial complex, the banking system that's bailed out every so often when it's you know, internal contradictions are made or exposed. They get bailed out, but no one else gets bailed out. You know, the $100 billion flowing into the Ukraine, and, you know, some people call it the looting phase. And capitalism loses its entrepreneurial, genuine free market characteristics and becomes sort of this monopoly system that we see. And a lot of this is a sort of a creation of something called, you know, the corporation itself. And this, what we're seeing here is this is a challenge to self-government, because the corporation as an entity is becoming a governing body, governance, an instrument of governance by the elite. We see that with BlackRock and Larry Fink and his open talk about ESG, environmental, social, and governance, where their policies and the amount of wealth that they're able to acquire with their globalist swindles to change governmental policy, to change our society. We see that, of course, the greatest example of that is Davos, where they get together and they decide to legislate for the world despite having no legitimate claim of representation, no mandate, but they talk about doing all these things. And this is the problem we're facing today. Is that, again, the governments are not sovereign, and of course the debt is a huge factor in that. In fact, that was the plan with going direct in 2019. This is why we're seeing just after 2019, August 2019, you had the pandemic, which enabled BlackRock's plan, which was I think unfurled at that meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in 2019, as reported by Catherine Austin Fitz. That the plan of going direct, whereas basically you make sovereign governments indebted to the central banks, so they no longer are able to control their fiscal policies, which means they have no sovereignty anymore. And so all governments become enslaved or indebted to these central banks that are controlled by the International Monetary Fund and the Bank of International Settlements, the owners of whom we are not allowed to know who they are.
I want to interject that. Mm-hmm. This is such a ludicrous three-handed Monty process. You have to remember that the central banks are definitely going to start putting the screws to the nations to start paying off the debt of the bonds, right? Mm-hmm. That they want. Now, just bear in mind that the ownership of the bonds, which the banks have, these reserve currencies, was all created with money that they produced out of thin air. Mm-hmm. The banks were not sitting there at the beginning of this with $40 trillion in the bank saying, you know, we'll just give this to the government so they can do all of their wars and stuff. But it's our money and we're sure they're going to pay it all back. The money they used to buy the bonds was credit that they created at a lower rate than the government was paying on the face of the bond. Mm-hmm. So it is a carny scheme at the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
What they lack is, and what the usual term is when you make a loan of your money, it's called consideration.
Yes, right.
Collateral. Banks don't have consideration because they actually create the money that they charge interest on.
Yeah. So they're going to come back and they're going to, you know, we're going to have to like, well, you saw this in 08 when they were like taking the Greek islands and things, you know, because mm-hmm. Greece could have the bond payments. This is going to happen ever. And they're going to, you know, we need to be paid back. We hate to like take physical assets and you're like your freeways and things like that. But we have no choice because, you know, you borrowed the money and now you've got to pay back.
We'll claim your pretty young women.
Exactly. But that's the what population, they do. I mean, this, they are, you have to be brain dead to accept this as anything other than just a crude form of theft. Mm-hmm. You know, that just using a little bit of bamboozlement because they've got like a treasury bond in between them and, you know, the fact that they're mugging you. But anyway, so that this is going to happen. And, you know, one hopes that the citizen will have a clear-minded response to this, that the unvaxxed rebellion will take this in mind, is that they're not only trying to kill us, but they're trying to steal from us every single day.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that was sort of baked in the cake, at least with the, with America. I mean, with the American experiment, it claimed to replace monarchical rule with, you know, with self-government and capitalism. And this was based on John Locke and the Enlightenment and these things, these ideas, Adam Smith. Of course, the founding fathers themselves were gotten wealthy. I mean, let's face it, they were landed gentry of America, and they had really had no intention of sharing the land with most Americans, which is why immediately after the Americans won their independence from Great Britain, you had the Whiskey Rebellion.
Right.
Because you had this bond swindle with Alexander Hamilton. Basically, they'd buy up all the debt on pennies on the dollar, and they turn around and they pass this law saying the federal government's going to make good on the debt with specie, with gold. And all of a sudden you had a plutocracy enthroned with the swindle, and you had a Whiskey Rebellion that was put down, and the rest you could say is history. You had some of the intrigues or the controversies regarding the first bank of the United States, the second bank of the United States, and the social factor in the Lincoln, perhaps even his assassination, the Civil War. And you had all the debates in the late 19th century with silver, bimetallism and these things, the gold, but that the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, that was the coup. That was the coup, because up until then, most businesses were self-financing. They actually financed growth through equity and profits, not through debt. And that was the coup, 1913. Then they got the war. And that's where you get the huge bond issuances and the pretext for debt and these things. And they're off for the races. And that's when America was lost. You know.
That, Tim, that is such a clear-minded and good description. That should be something that every citizen should listen to, because that is the real essential history of our nation. That's mm-hmm. that's what led to where this moment we are now.
And that's then they had to keep things honest for a little while, because you can even, despite, you know, of course you had the Great Depression, the spending, you know, the New Deal, and also the World War, but because of what happened after World War II, or in the aftermath of World War II, the whole global economy was in a wreck. The United States remained unscathed, so it was sort of the anchor of the global economy. I think in 1947, it produced more than half of the global GDP. And so all that gold came to the United States, so they were able to establish the Bretton Woods system, at least with a notional idea that the US dollar was linked to gold. But even that, you know, was violated a few decades later, because the U.S. government could no longer redeem the gold based on how many dollars it was created. This was the empire. Fun, you know, this is the welfare warfare state that was created with the Cold War in the 60s and these things. And and since then, it's funny, because after the 70s was kind of a hangover, you got in the sense in the 80s. That there was at least a sense that they'd gone too far, but it turns out that was just an interregnum period. And that's when they had leveraged buyouts. The Fed went crazy. For a while, they raised interest rates, but that was just to sort of the crush workers.
Do you remember the expression bond vigilantes?
Yes.
I mean, that was the idea that, you know, the government couldn't go too far because, you know, people would sell mm-hmm. the bonds.
Imagine Remember those old days? Or the gnomes of Zurich? Remember the gnomes of Zurich?
Yeah, the problem with that theory is sort of like claiming that the CIA needed money and so it was selling crack in the inner cities. I mean, the problem is you cannot audit the Federal Reserve. Therefore, mm-hmm. you don't have any way to know who is coming up with the money to buy the bonds. Mm-hmm. Right.
And also the bankers, it'd be nice if American bankers thought like Americans.
Well, that would be.
You know, and we have to defend the American dollar. That would, it would impose some restraint. And also, it means that they had some interest in preserving the way of life in America, when actually they just want to liquidate it. Because, I mean, they talk about that. You know, when you talk about, I was going back to what I was talking about with getting that guy MBS from Saudi Arabia to sign on to Agenda 2030 and all this green stuff and the artificial intelligence and the Great Reset stuff. is a lot of these financiers, George Soros has said this himself, that the standards of living in the West, particularly in the United States, need to be dropped. Considerably to even out with the rest of the world. That's how they look at it.
Tim, if you want to know where they want to take us to, just watch the TV series Naked and Afraid.
Yeah.
You'll see where Soros, what he has in mind when he's talking about reduction of our living standard.
Mm-hmm. And he's just a cosmopolitan. He's Hungarian. I don't know where he lives. If he's still living for that matter.
I mean, but remember, when you say Soros, you're just saying Rothschild.
Yes. Rothschild, yes.
100% Rothschild clone. They gave him the money, and they have him out there, you know, doing mischief and well-funded to do mm-hmm. so. You know?
These decisions were taken in the late 70s. I know there was a decision in the mid-70s in Europe to sort of outsource Europe's textiles, which were a source of high wages for Europeans, particularly in Germany. And the U.S. got on this kick in the 80s, started to outsource these things and then import cheap labor. At the same time, imposing policies, creating a culture where the native population doesn't procreate anymore. Yeah. Now you have Chuckie Schumer saying that because of low birth rates, we need to bring in more third worlders. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring all men, Chuckie.
Mm-hmm. So this is economics. Nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. So it's just one, you know, example of crude sophistry after another, creating pseudo sort of economic rationale for racial genocide. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just waging war by deception.
Yeah. You know, now, if you're in Ireland and if you don't accept 2 million people from North Africa to live in your island. Nation Ireland, you're a racist.
Yeah, I mean, so that's right, and the population is so, you know, are that they will not fight back because they've been their virility has been, you know, subtracted by the authoritarian personality science, you know, for 70-80 years, and they don't have anyone left or very few people left there that can really rebel. Mm-hmm. This is why you know, things are looking up.
Yeah, the Irish government literally has like a resettlement office for refugees. Why?
Sure.
And this office wags the finger at the Irish population who don't like the fact that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people from Nigeria or Sudan or Algeria are resettled, Ukraine are being resettled in their country. And these are all areas, again, that are hot spots or areas of instability or civil war. That NATO or the United States and their intelligence agencies create.
Yeah, you know, that's why I'm kind of happy that we discussed the Iran-Contra, like rationale that was given for why the CIA was inside the inner city. Because really what you're seeing here with like Ireland is just another example of this technique.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're just deliberately, they're bringing in people who have had, you know, a disastrous situation in Africa. So that is, you know, they are kind of, as the oligarchs would see it, they are the force of destruction. They're putting them into Ireland with the idea of just bringing it all down to this, you know, pornographic kind of unintelligible clump of people barely able to be, you know, called humans. And the whole point is this is the easiest group to first control and then genocide. So they're not bringing in these people to, you know, they say replacement. Well, yeah, this is in a way replacement because they're also not, you know, the European populations aren't having many kids. And of course, now with the vaccine, that cohort doesn't look like they're having any, as far as I can tell. We'll talk about that in some show in the future. But in any case, the future of Ireland is Nigerian at this point. They're the ones that are going to be having the babies. But, you know, you have to bear in mind, this isn't going to be some kind of workers' paradise. That's just a step toward the...
Well, the Nigerians aren't swimming to Ireland.
No.
Nor are they taking their personal boats or whatever. They're being flown.
And they're not bringing kind of the skills to make or to keep in existence a sort of middle class... you know, kind of mm-hmm. European city, country. They're being brought in to destroy it.
Yeah.
That's the purpose, and they will, and they'll the violence, and the pornography will just take what's left of the Irish culture and end it. So this is, you know, this is what's going on. In Ireland they have the Irish Light, that newspaper that comes out that is I think clear-minded, and that's what really the hope is. The Irish need at this point, God only knows what they can do, but they need to surf. They certainly have to start with local organizations. They have to assume that all of the political offices at top are obviously are Judeo-Masonic. Yeah.
Well, they're just tools of Google or Global Corp. Yeah.
So it's just the Ireland is like a microcosm of what's going on against all of the Europeans all over the entire world, right? Mm-hmm. Now, everywhere. You know.
And Ireland itself was created as a ethno-state. I mean, that's in its constitution. And so the current government is a treasonous government. It's just there's just a assets of foreign interests, Google, global corporations, the bankers.
Yeah,
and of course, Yeah.
Yeah, so that I couldn't agree more. They are the political class in Ireland is their, it's a Judeo-Masonic world. I mean, but poor Irish, you look at like how Palmerston was treating them, back in the 18th century. They've been subjected to the Judeo-Masonic genocide longer, I think, than anyone. That nation. And it's just amazing there's any Irish left on the planet. We're going to have to fight there. If you want to stay in existence in the future there, you look at like Victoria Nuland's comments. I mean, is that a person you can reason with or appeal to her moral sense? I mean, she is a visualization of the moral basis of the oligarchs. This is what it is. And
well, she's not acting in the interest of the United States or the American people.
It's the globalist Zio empire that she is trying to, basically put into, they want the planet to themselves. And she's just, everything that she is doing is has the effects of genocide. That's all that this is, So it's clever. It's hard to see from time to time, but it's, these people are step by step getting exposed. And, I was really, I enjoyed the interview you did with, his name is Gumley, I believe, the Brit. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very clear-minded, and he was giving a lot of very important statistics about the rise of the independent media. And of course, he was cautioning, how the oligarchs are responding. That interview you did with him, I really recommend. It was very, he's a very clear-minded individual. And, you guys had a great talk. So, it's that is the kind of understanding and technique that we can develop to start the organization of the resistance, because we are going to need to get that accelerated.
Well, I mean, yeah, his own country, Great Britain, is now less than half Christian.
Yeah.
40% identify as Christian, and they've had a 40% increase in the Muslim population since 2011. That's 2011. As recently as 2011, over 60% identified as Christian. And this is also, I think, a generational thing. This is the baby boomer generation is dying off. There's a precipitous drop in people identify as Christian. What you're doing, you're basically indigenous English people are losing their country, losing their identity, then you're losing your country. And this was deliberately imposed upon them. I think it really picked up under the Blair government in the 1990s, when, quite frankly, Jews infested the Blair cabinet and conspired to, they openly talked about just swamping the British working class with immigration. Barbara Roche, who was the head of—
Of course, they've done it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the intellectual DNA is very visible, and it always operates in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's always malevolent. They always have the smile and the rationale. But look, Tim, every single claim they make about how the immigration or how the Great Society or at the onset of these programs, there is always the workers' paradise in the future. But then it goes straight off a cliff as soon as they implement it. But they are never brought back for any kind of revision or reanalysis in the light of the failure.
Yeah. Right? Well, I think it was the city of Leicester where they had riots between Pakistani and Indians. So yeah. The violence of the Asian subcontinent is imported into Great Britain.
Right. But they never reanalyze. And so this just shows that what is occurring is accepted, not just accepted, but it was the plan. This is what they were, you know, wanting to bring about. That's why they're not going to change the Great Society programs. That's why they're not going to have the immigration policy, because the effect, even though it's catastrophic, even though it's just destroying everything, this is what they want. Plan. So, you know, the public, particularly Europeans, need to wake up to understand their political class as a secret society.
Well, look who controls the Conservative Party in the UK. Ehud Shilgun, I think is his name. He's an Israeli. And the same thing with the Labour Party. So they may get a lip service to like immigration concerns. Neither party is dedicated to actually protecting the borders. Actually, they to get dedicated to swamping the country and, you know, playing basically, you know, implementing the policy of global corporation, which is, you know, Zio Corp, you know, in swamping this country.
Zio Corp.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So that's, there it is. I mean, anyway, I think we've, you know, you can't really go through this stuff and not come to the conclusion of the malevolence.
It's visible. The current prime minister is an ethnic Indian who worked for Goldman Sachs. He's a soulless Indian. I had some regard for him if he actually identified as an Indian, like you were by Gandhi or something. But he's there. He's just an agent of Goldman Sachs, you know.
Yeah, World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
You know, so the public is getting more and more shut off from even the ability to have an illusion of democracy. We're you know, this is why we look at Newland's statement. You know, you kind of wonder, was this deliberate? You know, are they actually just revealing themselves as a dictatorship? Just
did anyone vote for Newland? Oh, she's appointed. Okay.
No, of course not.
Like, when people voted for Biden, were they voting for a war in the Ukraine? Yeah.
I mean, Newland could run on the F the EU platform. You know, I mean, she's, you know, she's one of the most, to the extent she's known, she's completely hated, and rightly so. But there she is giving advice to Ted Cruz as though she was some, you know, like representative of the public interest. So the political class, it's, you know.
Well, we can't address that group because if you do, you're an anti-Semite. So you can't think in that category.
That's the thing. That category is not in the, I love that expression, the Overton window. I thought that's very
amusing. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, we'll talk next week. Thank you, brother.
Enjoy. Bye-bye.